You ever notice how we keep trying to fill the gaping void of human connection with a bunch of BS? Like, instead of knowing your neighbors, you now get a $9.99 subscription to some app that reminds you to drink water. And instead of a tribe, you've got a group chat that died 3 years ago. But you're all too passive to just end it. That's community now. That's belonging in the USA. So we traded actual people for parking lots, and we replaced neighborhoods with cul-de-sacs, where the only thing that seems to move is Amazon vans. And the occasional raccoon high on leftover pumpkin spice latte. Think about it. For most of human history, our survival depended on other people. Tribe, village, family. Whether we liked them or not, they were there. And now, we can go an entire year without speaking to a single neighbor, unless it's to leave a passive-aggressive note about their trash cans or something. And we call this progress. It's as if we took the most basic things humans need. Connection, belonging, and this a sense of actually being seen. And we replace them with drive-throughs and Wi-Fi and self-checkout. It's civilization by way of a strip mall. And I think the really messed up part is that we convinced ourselves it was somehow better, more convenient. Because who needs messy human bonds when you've got DoorDash bringing you reheated chicken tenders at 11:47 p.m.? But that kind of convenience has a body count. I mean, look around. Loneliness is everywhere. Depression, anxiety, isolation, even suicides. And my guess is people aren't just sad, they're more or less rotting from the inside out. Because this is what happens when you build a culture where you can have 10,000 Instagram followers and still not have a single person to pick you up from the airport. So, these are some of my thoughts on how community died in the US and how we strangled it with picket fences and highways and an obsession with self-sufficiency that nobody really asked for. All right. So, the suburbs were supposed to be a paradise. A little lawn, a two-car garage, a house with enough square footage to store all your regret in. But what they really gave us was isolation wrapped in vinyl siding. Cities and towns used to force you to bump into people, and some of us may remember that. You knew the baker, the mailman, maybe even that one drunk guy screaming at pigeons on the corner. In the suburbs, everyone got their own box. A box for living, a box on wheels for escaping, and of course, eventually a box 6 feet underground. And then there's the car. Oh man. The car is the real coffin nail. We worshiped the automobile like it was the ultimate liberation. But what it actually liberated was us from each other. So the car meant you didn't have to walk to the store anymore and run into any of your neighbors. You didn't see them except when you rolled past them at 40 miles an hour. And you did that while pretending you didn't notice the foreclosure sign in their yard. So whole towns were designed so you could live there for 20 years and never have a spontaneous conversation. Sidewalks disappeared, front porches vanished, replaced with back decks, facing fence-off yards so you could drink your Coors Light in peace, staring into the void like a suburban monk or something. And we told ourselves that this was safety. Low crime, good schools, cul-de-sacs where kids could ride their bikes in circles like tiny inmates doing yard time. But what it really was, it was the slow sterilization of daily life. No corner stores or public squares, just strip malls, chain restaurants as far as the eye could see, and the nearest thing to culture being a Chili's with a 2-hour wait on a Friday night. And if you think I'm exaggerating, I mean, I wish I were. Robert Putnam wrote Bowling Alone, where he showed how North Americans basically stopped showing up anywhere that wasn't their couch. Church groups, bowling leagues, PTAs, town meetings, all of these were gutted. Between about 1965 to the late 1990s, active participation in civic organizations dropped by half. Half. Imagine if half your organs just decided to stop working one morning. That's about where we are as a society. Christopher Latch, in his book, The Culture of Narcissism, basically predicted Instagram long before Mark Zuckerberg was even born. He said that basically we would turn into self-absorbed consumers trapped in cycles of isolation and spectacle. And what do you know? He nailed it. Then there's Terry Tur or yeah, Sherry Turkle. She wrote Alone Together. And she found that the more we connect through screens, the lonelier we actually feel. Which sounds like one of those cruel paradoxes only humans could invent. Create the world's most powerful communication tool and then use it to ghost each other. Now, the data isn't exactly jolly either, but it's necessary. The US Surgeon General recently declared loneliness a public health crisis. Nearly 50% of Americans report feeling lonely on a regular basis. That's not exactly a fringe issue. That's half the country sitting around wondering why no one calls or even texts, for that matter. And if you zoom out, according to Harvard's study of adult development, the longest running study in on human happiness, the single biggest predictor of well-being isn't money, and it isn't fame, and it isn't eating, you know, enough kale. It's relationships, strong social bonds, which, if you've been outside recently, we're not exactly acing. So it's no coincidence that the golden age of the suburbs was also the golden age of tranquilizers. Mom's Little Helper wasn't just about keeping house. It was about numbing the existential dread of being trapped in a three-bedroom prison with beige carpeting. Now, ironically, all that so-called safety didn't save anybody. Because once you isolate people, they don't get safer. They just get weirder. And then things like paranoia sets in. People become convinced that the outside world is dangerous, even though statistically the most dangerous thing they'll ever do is drive that beloved SUV through a Wendy's parking lot. Now, the suburbs weren't really the American dream. They were more like the American quarantine. And like any quarantine, people forgot how to live once the doors finally opened. Okay, so if the suburbs put us in little boxes, technology came along and padlocked the doors. We used to at least have some excuse to see each other. School, work, grocery stores, libraries, bowling alleys, places of worship, various games, even the damn DMV. And now, you don't have to leave your house for anything except maybe dialysis. I mean, why talk to your neighbor when you can get groceries delivered by some gig worker barely making enough to cover gas? Why chat with the cashier when you can just self-checkout? Or why eat dinner with friends when you can scroll Instagram photos watching strangers eating dinner in Bali or wherever? So, not only did the smartphone more or less kill community, it embalmed it. We're all embalmed in a kind of digital fluid, scrolling past each other's curated corpses. Now, social media, it was supposed to promise us connection, but it just gave us dopamine casinos instead. You know, sometimes I really wonder if we're actually talking to each other, or are we just pulling the slot machine lever to see which post got more validation? The one about the dog or the one about the omelet? And, you know, in spite of all this alleged connection, it seems that people are lonelier now than at any other point in recorded history. We've got dating apps with literally thousands of profiles at our fingertips, and somehow it's still harder than ever to find someone to just sit in silence with. Marriages collapse, friendships evaporate, people ghost each other, and not necessarily because they're cruel, but because they're just exhausted. So technology made relationships feel transactional. For example, you're not really a friend, you're a follower. You're not a neighbor, you're a username. You're not a human being, you're content. And you're not a person, you're an avatar. And convenience, well, don't get me started. I believe convenience is the cancer that metastasized in the heart of community. I mean, look, I get it. We all love convenience. We love anything that saves time and energy, which is understandable these days. But there's a trade-off here. You know, why walk to a corner store when you can press a button and have a drone drop vitamins on your lawn? Why learn to cook when there's DoorDash? Or I don't know, why fix your sink when you can drown in YouTube tutorials and then end up calling the plumber anyway? Guilty as charged. We basically traded belonging for convenience. And the math never really added up. Yeah, we gain time, but we lose meaning. We gained options and efficiency, but ultimately, we lost intimacy. And somehow, in spite of this, we still don't feel we have enough hours in the day. Why is that? All right, here's the paradox. The more we insulate ourselves with technology, the less we can tolerate each other in real life. Funny how that works. Try talking to someone without checking your phone and you feel like you're breaking a social contract. People don't even really look at each other anymore. We look near each other, like actors missing the mark. And when I think about it, it seems that the digital world didn't just supplement community, it replaced it. And the replacement isn't even a good copy. It's kind of like trading your childhood home for a virtual reality simulation where the doors don't open and the neighbors are bots asking you to subscribe to their OnlyFans. So, yeah, I think the suburbs started the fire, but the phone in our pockets made sure it burned all the way down to ash. Okay, here's the thing about isolation. It doesn't just leave you alone, it leaves you hollow. Now, humans aren't designed for this level of separation. We're wired for community and stories, gossip, hunting parties, and sitting around fires making fun of Carl for burning the mammoth meat. So instead, what we've got is millions of people sitting in climate-controlled rooms, scrolling social media in silence while their neighbors rot two doors down. You know, the loneliest species in history is the one with 7 billion potential friends. Now, that's not irony to me. That's pathology. And we're seeing the fallout everywhere, every day. We're all well aware that rates of depression and anxiety are off the charts. So, since 2000, the U.S. suicide rate has climbed about 30%, according to the CDC. Deaths of despair from suicide, drug overdose, and alcoholism are so common now that they've actually lowered U.S. life expectancy in some years. Now, that's not just a blip on a chart. That's civilization flashing its check engine light. I mean, the DSM could just print one page that says, "Congratulations, you're alive in 2025. Well, there's a t-shirt slogan. So, loneliness eats at people in strange ways. It makes you suspicious. And it makes you angry. It makes you invent conspiracy theories because it's easier to believe in a global cabal of lizard people than to admit you haven't had a meaningful conversation in months. At least the lizard people are paying attention to you, right? And as for relationships, forget it. Marriage rates are tanking. Divorces are steady. People are swiping themselves into oblivion on dating apps, which, by the way, are designed for ad revenue, not love and connection. And nowadays, kids are growing up in households where everyone's in a different room, staring at a different screen. Family dinner has been replaced by Uber Eats orders delivered individually to each member like inmates in solitary confinement. And we treat mental illness like it's a glitch in the individual, when really, it's just a built-in feature of the system that we live in. You take a social animal, you strip away its village, and you feed it processed food, screen time, and endless debt. What the hell did we think was going to happen? Of course, it starts pacing in the cage, and eventually it gets sick. You know, the rats in those famous addiction experiments didn't overdose when they had a rat park, playgrounds, other rats, things to do. They overdosed when they were isolated. Sound familiar? Now, what's crazy to me is we've got more awareness of mental health than we've ever had. But we still have no actual functional infrastructure to address it. And the people that need it the most receive it the least. I see that every day. Therapy costs as much as a car payment now. Medications are doled out like candy, while the root causes, such as alienation, disconnection, economic precarity, etc., etc., these are all treated like background noise. It's kind of like mopping the floor while the toilet is overflowing. And I think probably the darkest part of this is that after a while, people forget what they're missing. We forget how to connect and how to just sit with someone in silence without needing a screen to buffer the awkwardness. We are forgetting what it feels like to belong, because belonging, it isn't a memory, it's a muscle. And if you stop using it, it atrophies. So the US didn't just kill community, it replaced it with a great big empty center, a bottomless pit that people are desperately trying to fill with Amazon packages, Instagram likes, Xanax prescriptions, and self-care routines that mostly involve shopping for even more shit that you don't need and that doesn't help. And naturally, the result is a society that looks alive from the outside, you know, busy streets, lit up windows, noise, movement. But inside, millions of people quietly wondering why their lives feel like a waiting room. All right. So cultures are held together by rituals. Things like shared meals, shared myths, stories, moments where everyone shuts up for a second and agrees that something matters. And it doesn't have to be anything grandiose. It could be church on Sunday, a block party, a holiday where everyone pretends fruitcake is edible. But the point is, people did things together. These days, it seems that our shared rituals are either dead or very few and far between, or worse, commodified. So, holidays aren't about gathering together to celebrate anything. They're about hyper-consumerism and arguing with relatives until you sneak off to scroll your phone. So the 4th of July, you know, it feels a lot less like community and more like everyone individually blowing up fireworks in their driveways, maybe losing a few fingers, trying to prove they're still free while financing a $900 barbecue on their credit card. And there's no public square anymore. It's been replaced by algorithms. We don't even consume the same culture anymore. I mean, everyone lives in their own curated universe. Different news, shows, different realities, which is, of course, fine on a certain level. But when, you know, the healthier aspects of the monoculture died, what rose up in its place wasn't diversity, but isolation chambers with Wi-Fi. And this in turn, of course, enabled echo chambers. I mean, let's take for example, look at the way our relationship to music has changed. It used to be something you experienced live, sweaty, shoulder to shoulder with strangers without a smartphone in sight. But now we're just experiencing it through a screen, through a frame. And not to mention, you know, music itself is increasingly being made by AI, which is just another step towards the human element being taken right out of the picture. And then we have movies, but you're pretty much going down the same road. Movie theaters are slowly phasing out as everyone just watches at home now, usually in isolation. And even food is losing its cultural glue. Grandma's recipes got replaced with DoorDash orders. Shared tables become TV trays. And we can't even agree on what counts as dinner anymore. You know, one person's eating keto, another's on Ozempic, another's raw vegan, another's just eating microwave popcorn because that's all they can afford. So we're not even divided by ideology, we're divided by appetizers. And here's the rather bleak part, in my opinion. We didn't lose rituals to some invading army or a natural disaster. We lost them because we outsourced them. Convenience killed culture. Why make traditions when you can just buy a subscription? Why create meaning when you can just rent entertainment? And look, again, I get it. As an introverted, reasonably isolated person myself, I like the convenience. It suits me, for the most part. But I also understand how it's destroying connection and community in our society. And it's causing all these problems. So this is why things feel so empty. Because without shared rituals, there's no glue. Without glue, there's no culture. Without culture, there's just empty commerce. And commerce isn't a substitute for belonging. You know, we've turned culture into a clearance rack. It's cheap, it's plentiful, and then it falls apart the second you try to use it for something real. And deep down, I think we all know it. That's why everyone's obsessed with nostalgia now. The past feels meaningful, even if it wasn't, because at least it was collective. Even if we didn't agree, we were still involved, engaging on a more personal level from, you know, instead of from behind a digital screen. And now we don't even remember what it feels like to belong to something bigger than ourselves, except Amazon Prime. And that's not a culture, that's just a tracking number. Okay, here's the dirty little secret. The system doesn't want you connected. Not really. Because connection makes you resilient. It makes you less dependent. And if you're less dependent, you're harder to sell to. Think about it. If you live in a strong community, you don't need to buy as much crap. Your neighbor has the ladder. You borrow it. Maybe you share meals. You share tools. You share ideas, etc. But isolate everyone in their own little box, and suddenly every person needs to buy their own ladder, their own air fryer, their own Wi-Fi, their own Peloton bike. They'll ride twice before it becomes an expensive clothes rack. And that's not dysfunction so much as a business model. So what this means is that loneliness is a gold mine for those that profit from it. Every app on your phone is basically monetizing your isolation. Facebook sells fantasy friendship. Instagram sells the fantasy of beauty. TikTok sells the fantasy of belonging to whatever inside joke the algorithm thinks you'll click on next. It's not community. It's a type of digital slot machine designed to keep you just lonely enough to never log off. And even the wellness industry has been commodified because we atomized society, then sold people questionable supplements and therapy apps as a cure. Then, of course, there's the housing racket, where we told ourselves homeownership was the cornerstone of the American dream. But I think most of us would agree that what it really did was just trap people in debt for 25, 30, 40 years while the bankers got rich. And suburban sprawl, it wasn't just bad urban planning, it was a financial extraction machine. Every cul-de-sac was another mortgage, another car loan, another endless stream of property taxes. And community wasn't designed into it because community doesn't pay dividends. And even food got monetized by isolation because once upon a time, most meals were actually shared. But now it's meal kits delivered in branded boxes, $17 sandwiches dropped on your doorstep by a guy who's on his third shift of the day because rent is half his income. So the very act of eating, which was once the cultural or central ritual of human bonding, even that is now like a subscription service. And of course, let's not forget pharmaceuticals. Depression and anxiety and insomnia, these are multi-billion dollar cash cows. Now, do you really think Big Pharma wants you to find meaning in your neighborhood potluck when they can sell you a lifelong prescription instead? The real cure for loneliness is belonging. But belonging doesn't generate quarterly growth. Pills do. So here's the bottom line. Isolated individuals are easier to control and easier to fleece. It's just that simple. That's why the system encourages independence, not the rugged, cool cowboy kind, the pathetic kind, where you're too disconnected to have anyone to call when your car breaks down, so you just hand over your credit card. So the overall takeaway here is that the isolation fundamentally equals big business for our corporate overlords, which means the death of community was not an accident. It was an investment strategy, and it paid off for everyone except you and me. Okay, so what do you do when you wake up and you realize that the whole thing has just been a long con? That the community you thought was supposed to give you life meaning got sold off for strip malls and HOA bylaws and high-speed internet. Well, first, you stop waiting for the cavalry. There's no cavalry. If anything, the cavalry got outsourced to Amazon drones. That's the cavalry now. So nobody's coming to rebuild your neighborhood or fix your sense of belonging. That's the bad news. Now, the good news, if we can call it that, is that you don't need permission. You can start small. Talk to your neighbors. I know that sounds like a radical act these days, but seriously, half the time the people next door are just as lonely and fried as you are. So maybe consider knocking on their door, share some food, I don't know, lend them a tool or something. And yeah, it's awkward at first, but so is everything worth doing. Second, build what you can control. Now, I've said it before. You're not fixing Congress, but maybe if you've got the space, you can plant a garden and learn to grow some food. Then you're not fixing Wall Street, but you can learn how to cook instead of relying on DoorDash to drain your bank account. Maybe try some volunteer work. Learn to build something, repair something. I know it may be a pain in the ass. You're not fixing suburban design, but you can invite people into your ugly living room and drink cheap wine together until something resembling humanity shows up again. And look, I get it. The idea of community has been so watered down and suppressed, it feels like a Pinterest board. But I don't think community is supposed to be cute and easy. It's supposed to be inconvenient. And it's supposed to involve people you don't always like. That's the point. Real belonging, it isn't about curating your echo chamber tribe of, perfectly agreeable friends. It's about finding ways to live alongside the flawed and the annoying and sometimes fascinating circus that is other people. Okay, third, remember to laugh. Because collapse without humor is just despair. You don't necessarily need to be optimistic. You just need to not let the absurdity crush you completely. Now, embrace the absurd, but also make sure to give it some space. You don't want to smother it. When you see a six-lane highway cutting through what used to be a beautiful neighborhood, laugh at the insanity. When someone tries to sell you community in the form of a $99 a month app, laugh in their face. Because humor is coping and it's resistance. And I know I'm repeating myself here. Because I've said this in other videos, but maybe the most important part of all this is to accept impermanence. If nothing lasts, you don't have to cling to the illusion that this mess is the only way things can be. You can build your own meaning and your own rituals. Your own strange little patch of community, even if it's just you and a couple friends and a rusty grill in the backyard. Because I don't see collapse as an ending, it's also a clearing. It's wiping the slate clean for a new start. Tabula rasa. I think it's a stage for honesty and renewed creativity and collaboration. You know, we traded belonging for convenience, but belonging, I think it's still available if we want it bad enough. And if we're just willing to sweat a little for it. And if nothing else, I think trying to rebuild it, it gives you a better story than scrolling yourself to death in a lonely cul-de-sac somewhere. And maybe after all is said and done, that's all we've really got left. Stories. Told face to face, preferably with someone who knows your name. Ideally, around a campfire. All right. That's all I got for now. Thanks for watching.